Hi, everybody. My name is Ben, and welcome to Headcanon, the podcast dedicated to exploring the vast reaches of cinematic universes that never were and never shall be. Every week on this podcast, I select a movie at random from a carefully curated list of some of the weirdest and most obscure movies I've never seen, I watch and review it, and then I try to imagine what it would be like if I was given the opportunity to expand it into a soulless, cash-grab multimedia franchise. I pitch sequels, prequels, spin-offs, crossovers, gritty reboots, TV shows, video games, and even porn parodies, taking movies that never got the attention they deserved and giving them far more attention than they deserve. Whew. So, I was really proud of that intro when I came up with it, especially like the little end bit where I was like, now I have something to repeat every week. But it's like 30 seconds long and it's sometimes just, it feels too long. Is it too long? Anyway, sorry. I was observing that in the moment. Anyway, this is Headcanon. Welcome back to the podcast. And this is episode 28, I think, or episode 8 of season 3, if you're keeping track of that, which I don't think anybody is. I think that's just me. But if you listen to last week's episode, I watched a movie called Flight of Dragons. That is, unless I put like a special episode in between here, like I seem to often do. But at the end of that episode, the random category I got was classic, which is any movie prior to 1970, so any movie from 1969 or before. And the random classic movie that I got was 4D-Man from 1959, and I should preface, that's 4D-Man as in like 3D, 2D, like four-dimensional man, not like 40-Man, like what I'm assuming the porn parody title is going to end up being. It's like 40-Man, it's a gangbang. I'm just saying that right now. I don't even need to think about that. That's going to be what the porn parody title is, but it's 4D-Man, and it's from 1959. It's a sci-fi film directed by Irvin S. Yeworth Jr., which is far from a household name, but you probably know him from his much more famous film, The Blob. And I'll just go ahead and get this out of the way now. I do that thing where I talk about all the other movies on my list that the director made that I'm going to watch eventually. I'll do the entire Blob franchise for my franchise retrospective. There is a franchise of it. There's the original, there's Beware the Blob, there's the remake, and there's one called Blobbermouth, which I don't know if I'll be able to find it to watch it if and when I get that randomly, but it's a weird parody, but I think it's technically in continuity. I don't know, but that's the Blob franchise. And the only other movie he's done that I have any interest in, there's a movie called Dinosaurus, which it seems just like a kind of standard monster movie. The only reason I have any interest in it is because I wanna find out what the Dinosaurus is. Is it just a regular dinosaur? Is it a specific kind of dinosaur? Is it just a Tyrannosaurus and they don't know what a Tyrannosaurus is, so they just called it Dinosaurus? Or is it like the new dinosaur from Jurassic World where it's like all the dinosaurs put together or something like that, like a genetic engineering thing? I don't know. I'm a little curious. I'm not as curious as I am to see why Jay Leno's character is named Poopy Butt in Americathon. If you listen to my episode on Collision Course, I'm still fascinated by that. I've got a choice episode coming up in a couple episodes here. I'm leaning towards Americathon just so I can crack that mystery. But I'm not as interested in the mystery of what Dinosaurus is, but it's on the list nonetheless. And actually, the reason I put this movie on the list, 4D-Man, is because of the lead actor, Robert Lansing, who is also not really a household name. He's a reputable character actor. Well, he's dead now, so now he's a fucking corpse. But when he was alive, he was a reputable character actor. But most people, if they knew him from anything, well, maybe not. I'm a huge nerd, so what I know him from is a very notorious episode of Star Trek The Original Series called Assignment Earth. And the reason it's notorious is because most of the cast of Star Trek is barely in it. It's what they call a backdoor pilot, where they take a show that's already running and they do a pilot for another show to basically spin off from that, where it's like all of a sudden you'll be having all these other characters that you've never seen before, and it's like an episode about their life, where like Supernatural did that just I think last season or two seasons ago maybe, where they were trying to do this thing called Wayward Sisters, and it's like, oh, here's all these other women characters that you've never met before, and wouldn't you like to see all their great adventures going forward? And I think they did it a couple seasons before that with like it was like monsters at a bar or something. That show's really gone downhill is the point. But anyway, backdoor pilot is when you try to create another show by sort of manufacturing a spinoff in just one episode. And that's what Assignment Earth was. And Robert Lansing played Gary Seven, who I think was being set up as sort of like the Doctor Who of the Star Trek universe, but in a really sort of lame and not interesting way. And but I mean, he was like a weird kind of, I don't know if he was an alien. I think he was like a human transplanted by aliens into the future or into the past. I don't even really remember it. I just remember he had a cat that would transform into a sexy lady. And then he had a Terry Garr was his secretary, who would sort of be like his companion, if you extend the Doctor Who metaphor. Kind of actually weird. Terry Garr is notoriously cagey about talking about, she doesn't talk about it, her experience on the show in interviews. I don't know if maybe there was like a weird Me Too thing, or, I mean, we don't really call it a Me Too thing back then, we just called it Tuesday. But, you know, like something happened that she doesn't want to talk about, and I've always been curious, like what the reason for that is. I mean, it's probably trauma, so I don't want to delve too deeply into that, but that's just a weird thing surrounding that thing that you probably don't care about because it's Star Trek. But anyway, that's why I wanted to watch this movie, because it's actually Robert Lansing's first feature film, and of course, like I said, director of The Blob. I mean, I'm not like a ridiculous fan of the Blob franchise or the Blob movies. I remember liking the 80s one. I don't even really remember the original, but I am curious to see what else he's got. What the fuck was his name even? Irvin S. Yeaworth Jr. I'm going to forget that. In fact, I've just forgotten it as I just checked on it. And I don't usually do this, but since there wasn't a lot to work with Irvin S. Yeaworth Jr., and no, I didn't remember that, I'm reading off the paper now, I also wrote down a couple Robert Lansing movies that I might want to watch later on. First and foremost, there's a movie from, I want to say, the early 90s called The Nest, which, not to be confused with They Nest, which was like a late 90s TV movie. This was, like, I believe, a theatrical film, and the premise of it intrigues the shit out of me. It's basically these bugs that, I guess, they eat people, and then they take on the form or some quality of the thing that they eat. Sort of like the bugs in Wreck-It Ralph, if you remember them, but like a horror movie version of that. And I'd never heard of this movie. I looked it up fairly recently, like within the last like 6 months or so. And the screenshots, I mean, it looks like a lost, like, Stuart Gordon movie, like Society or something, just with weird insect monsters. And I definitely want to see that at some point. I may even pick that as a choice episode down the line if I don't get it relatively soon. Also, Island Claws, which I believe is a giant crab movie. There's a movie called She. It's S.H.E., Security Hazard Expert, which apparently is like a femme fatale spy movie of some kind. It looks very much like an Andy Sidaris movie, though I don't believe it is. Andy Sidaris, if you don't know, he did the Boobs, Bullets, and Bodies or something. I can't remember the name of it. It's like a series of like TNA exploitation movies from the 80s. And this looks like that, but I'm pretty sure it's not affiliated with it. And he's also in Empire of the Ants, which I don't know if it's a killer ant movie or a giant killer ant movie, but either way, I'm sold. There's ants that kill people of some size relative to humans. And finally, there's a movie called Scalpel, which I'd never heard of, but I'm going to put it on the list because it just sounds really interesting. Apparently, Robert Lansing plays a plastic surgeon who takes like an accident victim and reshapes her or remolds her face so that she looks like his dead daughter. And it just seems kind of creepy. I don't even know where you go from there in that story. But anyway, those are some other movies I might be watching down the line. But today, I'm going to watch 4D Man. That's the movie I'm watching. Sorry, if I seem a little lethargic, maybe a little crabby today. It's getting a little later than I usually like to record these. It's actually like 1 in the morning. It's just, no, it's closer to 2. I'm sorry. I wasn't even paying attention to that. But yeah, I'm not necessarily in my right headspace, so hopefully that won't color my review. Hopefully when I watch this, I won't just be like dismissing otherwise good things about it just because I'm in a bad mood. I don't think so. I think I can still be fair, but we'll see. So I'm going to pause this, I'm going to watch 4D Man, and I'm going to come back, and I'm going to tell you what I think.
Two objects can occupy the same space at the same time under proper conditions. But he doesn't know that his obsession will transform a man into a monster.
My name's Tony Nelson. I think my brother works in there.
Roy, it's a bust. Now finish off the block, will you? Let's not have any contamination problems.
Scott, I've got to talk to you.
Look, I can't talk now. I'm running an experiment.
We did all this morning. Now, why don't you just tell me?
Well, I've never seen anything like it.
You mean you believe that it can be done?
Believe it. I did it.
That's like
The fourth dimension.
Scott, the amplifier isn't working. You did that by yourself.
Maybe I just like the power of being able to do something nobody else can do.
Oh, no.
I can get you these things.
Come on, how many things can you name, huh?
I have to start looking for something that saps the life out of a man like juice out of an orange.
The only thing is, he can walk through a wall and I can't.
And I'm back, and I've just watched 4D Man, which I feel like it was the 4D Men gangbang porn movie, and they just gangbang me in the face, because this movie was fucking terrible. I feel like it is incumbent upon me to once again throw out the reminder that the category is classic movie, and that is not in any way something that should denote quality. It is not to say it is classic because it is good. It is classic because it is old. It is before 1970. Anything before 1969 qualifies as classic for the purposes of this category. This movie, while technically a classic, is in no way a classic. This movie hurt me. And I mean, it's not like the worst movie I've ever seen for the podcast or anything like that. I don't know if I said it. Oh, no, I was going to say if I said it on Project Metal Beast. No, I remember what it was. It was The Mangler 2. It's still The Mangler 2. It's probably going to be The Mangler 2 for a long time. This was not nearly that bad, but this was still pretty fucking bad. This was a long fucking slog of a movie. I had to take some breaks. I had to stop it and get something to eat and kind of pace myself. And it's not even like it's unbearably, like, unwatchably bad in the sense that, like it's assaulting you with its badness in the way that The Mangler 2 was. It's just like nothing is happening. And it's in that way that this is the big thing with this movie. It feels like it's caught in the middle between what you associate with, like, 1950s sci-fi B-movies, and then what you associate with more, like, experimental films of the 60s and 70s. Like, this is caught in the middle of those two trend lines, and it doesn't satisfy as either one or as a hybrid of the two or anything. And it constantly feels like it's struggling against, I was gonna say, the bonds of an inability to experiment, but it's struggling against a lot of different bonds. It's hamstrung by what it appears to be a very low budget, but is incapable of using a low budget and still doing something great like a lot of very low budget movies do, if they have competent directors and producers behind them, which this evidently did not. It's hamstrung by, yeah, like I said, just the consequences of the time. Like, the characters in this movie, to say they're cardboard and shallow is an insult to shallow cardboard. I think I stole that from Roger Ebert, now that I'm saying that, not intentionally. But other than the title character, who is, you know, legitimately the most interesting character in the movie, everyone else is, like, right out of what you would see in a parody or a pastiche of a 1950s B monster movie. There's the square-jawed heroic guy. There's the damsel in distress. There's all that, and none of it is subverted or deconstructed or anything. Not that I would expect a movie of this time to do that, but in lieu of anything else, in lieu of doing it well, I would hope that they would do something different, or at least subvert my expectations in some way. I mean, it subverted my expectations insofar as I expected it to be decent, and it wasn't even that. The first fucking shot of the movie, I mean, it would be an insult to matte paintings to call it a matte painting. It's a painting of a building that is meant in no way to resemble a real building. Because, like, matte paintings, they're, like, usually there to account for the fact that, like, they didn't have CG back, like, until, like, the 2000s. So, like, they had to draw an image, and then they would have somebody, like, walking into, like, a grandiose, epic-scale castle or something, you know? This, like, there's no attempt to make somebody try to, like, walk in or out of the building. It's just a fucking, I was gonna say it's like something you would hang on your wall, like if you bought a picture frame and it had a picture in it that's, like, just the whatever stock picture that you take out in order to put your picture in it. That's what this is, but the movie wants you to think that it's a real laboratory and there's a real guy in it, and that's the first fucking scene of the movie. That's, like, this is what you're gonna get. This is the level of quality that we've put into fucking 4D Man. This was garbage. I'll talk about, this is probably going to be like the shortest episode. I have nothing to talk about with this movie. I will talk about the one thing I legitimately and pretty much unequivocally enjoyed, and that's Robert Lansing's character, the titular 4D man. The premise is, you know, they're conducting two experiments. There's just so much stupid here. They're conducting two different experiments that then combine into one experiment sort of arbitrarily. And I say arbitrarily from a story construction standpoint, like, there's no reason why it couldn't have just been one experiment, but for some reason, they're two brothers and they're each running two different experiments that then merge into one in order to create this event where one of them, Robert Lansing's character, develops this ability to phase through solid objects, essentially. And the other brother is the square-jawed hero I referenced, and boy, is he one of the most boring fucking characters I've ever seen in a movie. But Robert Lansing's character, he develops this ability, and purely by accident, they didn't know, the experiment was to see if you could... Well, okay, the one experiment was to see if you could pass through solid matter. The other experiment was to create the most indestructible metal known to man called Carbonite. And not Carbonite, by the way. I kept hearing Carbonite, but I had to look it up on Wikipedia. It's Carbonite. And the inclusion of the Carbonite helps the other experiment. It's not really well thought out or well executed or explained. But anyway, Robert Lansing comes out of it with the ability to phase through walls, and he ultimately becomes evil because he finds out that every time he phases through solid matter, it takes years of his life away. And they have this really half-assed, like, I would call it pseudoscience. I think it's probably what passed for pseudoscience at the time, where they talk about the fourth dimension is time, maybe. I think that's what they're saying, or something about the energy of a lifetime. It was very Neil deGrasse Tyson would not look upon this movie favorably from a scientific standpoint. But anyway, he can pass through walls, but when he does, he loses, like he ages rapidly. But then he also finds out that in order to reverse this, he can phase through people and sort of suck their life force out. And I say that, and that sounds like a really cool thing. Like the movie Life Force, where she's creating these vampires and, like, desiccated husks and things. No, it's not that. One of the many problems with this movie is the shitty special effects. And I say that, it's 1959, you're like, really? You're going to complain about the special effects? They could have done so much better than this movie. I'm not asking for much. I'm just saying, like, the transformations in this movie, like the aging... Or just like when they, you remember in the Wolfman back in the fucking, what was that, the 30s or the 40s, when they would just like put hair on him, but in this case they just put like wrinkles on people and it just looks awful. And the phasing, fucking, they're so in love with this phasing effect where he just walks through walls, and you know that, you know how you do that with like the composite and everything, but most of the time he's walking through doors that like were closed right before he walks up to them, so they're not even locked. So it's like, you could have just opened the door, but you fucking love this stupid shitty effect. And I mean, just do something with it. That's all it is he walks through a wall. You can walk through walls? It's not like we just saw you do that 20 other times before. It's not like, I mean, there are scenes where he gets shot and the implication is they're passing through him because he's phasing, but you never see that. You never see, like a dynamic shot of him standing and somebody shoots and then you see the slug go into the wall or anything even like that. But anyway, Robert Lansing, his character gets this ability and instantly becomes evil, and he decides to... Well, that the other thing, shit happens off-screen. He decides to rob a bank just because he sees it, and he's like, I can walk through walls now, so I might as well rob a bank. And then they have, like many, many scenes later, they reference, oh, yeah, they found a dollar bill that was wedged out of, like, wedged into the vault wall or something. And it's like, well, why didn't you show that heist? That would be interesting, right? A guy walking through walls? I'm saying, you know, make it even more gruesome. Have, like, a security guard chasing him, and he pulls the security guard through the wall, and then that's, like, the dead security guard embedded in the wall. Wouldn't that have been a great image? Wouldn't anything have been a great image? There are no great images in this movie. There's a fucking shitty-ass building painting thing in the first shot. That's what you get in this movie. That's a metaphor for this entire film. Just very, very poorly executed. And... You know, a lot of times I'll say, like, it's a great idea, but poorly executed. This is an okay idea. And, like, it's not even, like, I wouldn't call it as bad, or at least not as offensively, actively bad as, and I know I bring it up all the time, The Invisible Maniac. I feel like, in a way, it's that movie done right, or at least better, but even as like that being said, it's like Dime Store Hollow Man. And Hollow Man isn't even that great from what I remember. It's on my list to... Well, actually, I think that's the double feature thing because I don't think there was a third Hollow Man. So that'll be one of my double feature episodes eventually, maybe, if I don't fucking give up on this podcast by then because I have to watch fucking movies like 4D, man. God damn it. And I feel like even my exasperated reaction is giving this movie too much credit and too much power over me to say that it was this bad. It's not punishingly bad. It's just so lazy and just so overbearing in its laziness. It opens up with this fucking jazz score, and this jazz score is punishing. And that's just my thing. I fucking hate jazz music. And I hate to say that. Like, my aunt is a jazz musician. She literally has that as her job, and I go to her concerts all the time. And I'm not saying she's bad or that I don't like it, but it's not a genre of music that I can appreciate. Mostly because my head is so exacting and kind of, I don't know, what do you want to say? I appreciate patterns and things that are very well planned out and streamlined, and they fit together like puzzle pieces. That's how my brain works. So the sort of improvisational shit that you get with jazz music, or Melissa McCarthy, the jazz of shitty movie actresses, it doesn't hit my brain right. And this movie, the jazz is all over it, and it's like, it's worse than Tokyo Drifter. If you listen to my Tokyo Drifter episode and the theme song to that, this is worse than that. But I keep getting distracted. Robert Lansing's character. Well, Robert Lansing as an actor. I mean, he is very good in it, and he is appropriately menacing. His sort of deterioration from a kind of very just sort of boring, typical scientist guy to kind of a cuckold out for revenge. I hate to use that. I feel like I use like alt-righty terms a lot, ironically, but to the point where people might think I am that when I'm not. But the whole sort of thing is like a love triangle where, oh, I forgot Lee Merriweather is the girl. She's in it, and that made me sad. I associate her with Batman, and so like I think she had a more illustrious career than she did. I actually looked up her IMDb, and there was really wasn't anything. But anyway. The brother comes and he intercedes in Robert Lansing's relationship with his girlfriend, and then they start cheating on him, and Robert Lansing's boss is fucking with him and taking credit for all of his work. His name is Cargan. I think there was a dialogue where they're like, oh, it's called Carganite. Just like it's named after your boss, right? So he's taking credit for it. Is his name Mr. Cargan? That doesn't sound right. But anyway, it's that thing where you develop all the people that he's going to get revenge on, or going to want to get revenge on anyway. He doesn't ultimately... He does kill his boss, and he kills this doctor guy, and I think eventually he kills the guy who's like his, I guess, rival. I don't know. I think the guy that works for him, but is like trying to one-up him all the time. And when he does that, when he is in that mode, especially when he's there are portions when he's in the old age makeup before he's sucked the life out of somebody. And again, special effects are shit. They never show like the life get draining from one person and going into him. It's just like you cut away to the next morning. He wakes up and he's young again. But like there are moments when like he just gives like a really sinister smile, and it really just works. It conveys what it's trying to convey. You know, the bare minimum thing I should expect from a movie, and I'm congratulating it for doing it in these moments because it so fucking never does in any other moments. And I'm losing track of it just because it was so boring. I'm doing a thing I don't like to do. I write my notes when I do these movies, and I write them just so that I've written them down, and sort of the act of writing them down cements them in my memory. But usually I don't refer to my notes because I've either enjoyed or at least been affected by the movie enough where I don't need to. I can just like remember what I thought about it, good or bad. But this, it was so, I mean, middle of the road is an insult to the middle of the road. This is, it is mediocre in the most pejorative version of that term, to the point where I have to look at my notes and remember, is there anything else I have to talk about? I have no segues anymore. Normally I have very natural segues because I'm speaking contemporaneously and with a stream of consciousness, and so I the segues are natural. They are just, you know, one topic to the next. Now I gotta go, okay, what else? Speaking of Me Too shit, a bunch of weird, like, well, I guess it's 1959, I should forgive it, but misogyny all over the fucking place. The Lee Merriweather's character is basically treated like a secretary, even though I think she's supposed to be their equal. And there are points where she's talking about like I'm your girl. Are you my girl? Yeah, I'm your girl. And at one point, the assistant guy, the guy that was like trying to one up the doctor, I think he flat out tries to rape her, but in a way that the movie doesn't know that that's what's happening. Like, he's blocking the door and hitting on her really, like, hardcore. He's like Brett Kavanaugh-ing it. And it's just really distasteful. And that's the whole movie in a nutshell. It just, they left a bad taste in my mouth. And I can't recommend this to anyone. And it's not, before you say it, it's not like this is an older movie thing. I loved Planet of the Vampires, which was an older kind of B-movie like this. It was done well. I liked Corridors of Blood, which isn't even really a kind of movie I typically enjoy, but I felt it was well executed for what it was. But this was just garbage. And I read on Wikipedia, apparently, like, the advance that he got for The Blob was the money that he used to make this, or at least the starting money for financing or something. And that's what the movie feels like. It feels like when Roger Corman would make a movie and then he'd realize he still had 2 days left on this set, so he's like, let's make another movie, and then that would be The Terror or whatever. That's what this movie felt like. It felt like they made The Blob and they were like, well, we got a little bit more money left. You want to make another movie? I guess we could write a script, sure, whatever. He walks through walls. Great. That's all this is, and they don't do anything interesting with it. I think there's an interesting germ of an idea in here. I wouldn't even say the premise, in total is interesting, but poorly executed. I feel like just this idea of bad guy that can walk through walls and kill people he phases through, like, that's the good idea. That's not even a whole story. You still have to have an interesting story there, and this movie has none of that. I'm not even gonna drone on. I feel like I'd just be repeating myself at this point. Don't fucking watch 4D, man. It's not good. It is not up to the quality, the standards that I apply to movies like Big Shots and ZPG and Exterminator City. I liked Exterminator City better than this movie. Exterminator City, if you didn't listen to that episode, and you should, because the episode is just me witnessing madness at work, but a mad genius, I've come to believe. It's about puppet robots, one of whom believes he's the Antichrist, and the other is a detective hunting him. And I say they're puppet robots, they're robots in the context of the movie, but they're puppets in real life. And then all the kill scenes are porn actresses that filmed their own scenes in their own houses, where they just screamed at the camera, and then you cut to a robot stabbing like a piece of cloth meant to look like them. I'm not going to dwell on Exterminator City. Like I said, you'll listen to that episode. I liked that movie better than this movie. I liked Reuben and Ed, the shitty comedy remake of Jerry with Crispin Glover walking through the desert for an hour and a half. That movie was better than this movie. That's all you need to know about this fucking movie, 4D Man. Again, not as noxiously terrible as Invisible Maniac, not as bad as Project Metal Beast, not as bad as The Mangler 2, but when that's even in the conversation where you're like, well, it's not as bad as that, but it's not that much better, it's all bad. It's bad all the way down, and that's all I got to say. Don't watch 4D Man. It's terrible. That's my review, and now I'm going to stop this podcast. I'm gonna take a break, and then I'm going to come back, and I'm gonna have my 10-point plan for how to turn 4D Man into a cinematic universe that will no doubt, even if I employ the littlest effort possible, it will no doubt be better than the actual movie 4D Man. So, stay tuned for that.
A man, an idea, the equipment, a place to work in secret. All the ingredients are here. He attacks the job of trying to pass a wooden dowel through a steel block with the confidence of a man who knows it can be done. Maybe it will work tonight. It has failed many times before, but driven by an obsession that it can be done, he is unconcerned with failures of the past or dangers of the future. His only interest is to prove his theory. More power, Now it's steel against steel. Two objects can occupy the same space at the same time under proper conditions. He knows his theory is sound. It's all down on paper, a few precious pages that represent years of research and experimentation. But he doesn't know that his obsession will transform a man into a monster, a man whose life will be changed as he crosses the threshold into the fourth dimension.
And I'm back. And I've got my 10-point plan for how to turn 4D Man into a cinematic universe. And if I don't say so myself, I do feel like these are better than the movie, if only by default. So first, before I get into this, I gotta say a couple of things I always say every week. First, spoilers abound from this point on. It doesn't fucking matter for this movie. This movie sucks and you should never see it. But I am gonna spoil the shit out of it if I haven't, you know, revealed anything. Revealed, as if there's anything you could reveal with this movie. If I haven't spoiled anything about this movie already that I'm going to spoil later, that's just fair warning. If you want to go away and not watch 4D Man and then come back and listen to the rest of the podcast, feel free to do that. But spoilers abound. And also, if you want to email the podcast, you can, and I would ask that you please do so if you like it. The email address is headcanonpodcast@gmail.com. That's HEAD CANNONPODCAST @gmail.com. That's canon spelled like the military instrument because I thought I was being clever at the time. And that's the email address for questions, comments, insults, and most importantly, requests. If you want to request that I watch a specific movie and build out the cinematic universe for that movie, I am happy and willing to do so as long as I can afford it, as long as I can find it, and as long as it's not like a fucking snuff film or something. My standards are very low in terms of, like, quote-unquote objectionable content. I'm just not going to watch a Serbian film. That's why I throw that out there. But anything else... Well, there's probably something worse, like Sallow, I'm probably not going to do either. Stuff like that, you know what I'm talking about. Now, if anybody does request anything, it's probably just going to be that shit. But anyway, if you want to request something, send me an email, and I'll do it if I can, if it meets my stated criteria. But anyway, also, if you found me on iTunes, as I imagine most people do, please, if you like it, rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. And also you can find me at my website at headcanonpodcast.blogspot.com, spelled the same way. You can find all the episodes there with posters and liner notes and things. So that's it. That's all I've got to talk about before I get into what I do every week, which I pitch out the multimedia franchise for the movie I watched, and starting with the sequel. And like I said, in order to talk about the sequel, I got to reveal the ending to the movie, so I got to spoil that. But the ending to this movie, again, doesn't matter, don't watch it. And it's... especially the ending, the fucking ending. Well, I mean, it's fine, I guess he invades the lab. I don't know why. I know he has to find some kind of device that they think they can use to stop him, and he wants to destroy it first. But and instead, he meets up with the girl, Lee Merriweather, and she tricks him into being solid to kiss her, and then she shoots him, and then he stumbles back, and then he's sort of in this observation deck that looks on to the experiment, to the Karganite creation machine. I don't even know what the fuck it is, but there's a big wall of this supposedly indestructible metal Karganite, and he's like, I'm the 4D man. He doesn't actually say that, but he's like, I have all this power, I can do anything, I can go through anything, nobody can stop me, not even Karganite. And then he walks into the wall, and the implication is that even though he can go through it, it's so dense molecularly that it ultimately crushes him to death. So you see his hand sort of poking out of the wall and going limp. But here's the thing, folks. This may not be the end, because this is an Irvin S. Yeaworth Jr. movie, and there aren't enough of those to justify this being a thing, but I know it happened in The Blob, and it happened here too, where he seemingly dies in a way that is apparently, or at least appears based on the visual language of the film, to be fairly definitive. But there's a big question mark at the end. It says the end, and then question mark? Is it really the end? Is he really dead, even though it looks like he clearly died? I don't know. Do you know? Nobody knows. We'll only know when we watch the sequel to 4D Man that nobody ever made, because nobody ever wanted it, because this movie was a piece of shit. But anyway, I came up with something, because that's what I do on this podcast, regardless of the quality of the film. And so my sequel idea is he didn't die in that carbonite. That question mark was appropriate, because there's more story to tell. But it's... Did I accidentally say carbonite just then instead of cargonite? Because my idea is that he's sort of frozen, much like Han Solo is frozen in carbonite, in this cargonite. And at some point, I don't know what, maybe they keep it there just to sort of, they assume he's dead, but they keep it there just in case. But like an industrial espionage agent or something steals it. And this is many, many years later. Maybe not too many years later, because I am going to bring back other characters. Maybe like 5-10 years later. And there's this aging billionaire, I was going to say an Elon Musk type, but like if he was really, really fucking old, like 90 years old, and he kidnaps the mad doctor, or like he believes or knows for, I don't know even, fucking I don't care, I'm not going to make those connections. He finds the thing, and he steals that block of carbonite with his phased body into it, and then he breaks it apart. I don't know if he would, if it's that indestructible, but he finds some way to extricate the phased Robert Lansing character out of the block and essentially resurrect him, but also figures out a way to trap him. And the idea is this old guy, he wants to somehow reverse engineer the experiment and find out what happened to Robert Lansing so that he can do it to himself, not so that he can phase through walls, but you know, he's afraid of his own mortality. He wants to exploit the life-sucking element of this experiment, and he wants to become a life vampire, essentially. So he wants to figure out how to do that, and he needs Robert Lansing's character in order to do that. But in the meantime, all that time spent permanently phased in that wall let Robert Lansing, who was conscious the whole time, so now he's even crazier than he was, but it also gave him time to further develop his abilities and learn new things about them. And in the meantime, he has developed the ability to not only phase his physical body, but also phase his psyche through people and sort of possess people. Well, he can phase his psyche, his brain, through people and control their minds, and he uses that to manipulate people and eventually escape, and he can then phase completely through a person where he doesn't drain their life force, or maybe he does after a while or after a point, but he can physically possess people and take them over and use them to his aims. So you have this rich guy, you know, kidnapping this evil phasing mad scientist for his own ends, and in the meantime, you have the brother, Boring McBoringface, I don't fucking remember his name, he's been experimenting with the Cargonite to break it or try to destroy it, to confirm once and for all that his brother's really dead and isn't going to hurt anybody ever again. But when then, obviously, the Cargonite's stolen, so he's like, oh, I gotta figure out who stole it. They had to have known what was inside it. There's no reason to steal that block otherwise. But I'm going to... before I go to figure out who did it, I'm gonna bring out the science experiment I've been working on these last 5 or 10 years or however long it is, a giant Iron Man suit made of cargonite, made of the most indestructible material known to man, made into a suit. You know, that's a thing that they never, or maybe I don't remember any sort of satisfactory explanation for it. When you have these really, really hard metals that are supposedly indestructibly strong, like adamantium or what was the Wakanda one? Vibranium? How do you mold those and shape them into things? How do you get Wolverine's claws if there's nothing strong enough to break Wolverine's claws? How did you melt the liquid metal to coat his bones if it's the strongest metal in the world? And the same with the vibranium. How do you make a shield out of it then? I don't know. Maybe I just don't know anything about metallurgy. That's entirely possible. But anyway, I'm saying he turned Cargonite into a giant Iron Man suit, speaking of Marvel superheroes, and he goes after his brother to fight him off, and I'm thinking, I don't know if you want to make the Lee Merriweather character a little more interesting, maybe she tags along, maybe she develops like a phasing suit or something, where it's she doesn't have the ill effects of it because it's the suit and not her, but it gives her the same abilities, and so they're like a tag team superhero team, whatever, tag team superhero team, that's very redundant, but they go to find the 4D man and stop him once and for all. But of course, at that point, he's taken over this rich guy's compound, and I don't know, maybe he's at fucking killer robot sentries or something. But I'm saying you pitch it out as a modern day superhero movie rather than a shitty 50s B movie. And I say that I love 50s B movies. I don't say shitty 50s B movie as if all 50s B movies are shitty. This is just a shitty 50s B movie. and barely a 50s B movie. It was in 1959, but shitty nonetheless. But anyway, that's my sequel, and that gets me to the prequel, where this one I'm not even really happy with, mostly because it doesn't fit with the history of what I'm talking about. I just kind of threw it out there. You probably shouldn't be too surprised that I'm not necessarily as personally or intellectually invested in these as I might with other pitches where I actually like the movie. I mean, I don't know if you can feel just the pained obligation in my voice where I'm just like, well, I gotta finish the podcast, otherwise there'll be no consequences? I don't know. But anyway, the prequel, it's set like in Victorian times, and it's a prequel to just the idea that this is a thing where you can create some experiment to phase people through solid matter. And so I'm saying that the reason they never caught Jack the Ripper is because he was the product of a sinister Victorian experiment in like mentalism or mesmerism. The idea is that the waves of the experiment like affected his brain and gave him the ability to tap into this fourth dimension. That's, I believe, how they explained the science of it in the original movie. So I'm saying, you know, that you can get away with that with like I said, like the mesmerism of the time. So it's a Victorian era equivalent of that same experiment, and it just happened to drive the guy insane, and he became Jack the Ripper and started killing prostitutes by like traveling through walls and shit. And that's all I have really with the idea. I was gonna say like maybe like he to connect it to the other movie or the other movies. Obviously, I'm gonna pitch other ones, but I was thinking of the fourth dimension itself, sort of like the Speed Force, where like it connects people through time. So maybe every time he phases through walls, or if he's phased too long, he starts like seeing the original 4D man, and like they see each other and they can interact across time, something like that. Just something to make it more interesting. You know, those things you just throw into movies to make them fun. That thing that the people that made the 4D man movie didn't know how to do. But anyway, that's my prequel. I don't even know really where to go with it from there. But that gets me to spinoff. And this one I do kind of like a little bit. Once again, this is more of a conceptual spinoff than a spinoff of a specific character. A lot of times I feel like that's cheating, but for this movie, I don't care that I'm cheating. This is like, you know, one of those shitty video games where you just want to see the end, so you use the level select code to skip to the next thing. I had one idea for like an actual character spinning off, and it was the... I didn't even mention him in the review, because fuck it, who cares? But there was like this sort of... Don Knotts, Barney Fife style security guard at the science base, whatever you call it. And I was thinking, like, maybe he gets a transfer to Area 51, and so he's just a bumbling security guard at Area 51. That's all I had, and it wasn't good enough. So I'm saying, you know, the government secures the patent for this phasing research. They figure it out, and they create an entire agency filled with basically like sort of like wet works operatives that can pass through walls. And they figured out a way around the de-aging thing. They all take like a pill to keep themselves from aging rapidly when they use their abilities. But that also keeps them sort of like their fealty to the organization. They can't just escape and go rogue, except one of them does. Their former leader, their former captain or whatever, he stops taking the pills because he gets paranoid. He believes that the pills are like mind control or something. But then he figures out why he had to take the pills. He starts losing his youth, and then he figures out that he can suck the life out of people and renew it. So he becomes sort of a rogue agent. And then the team would have to go after him, and so it's a bunch of people who can pass through walls and you know, fight in kung fu and shit. And that's another thing with the phasing. And this is something, this isn't unique to this movie. It's anytime you see phasing in movies, it always bothers me, or TV shows, because they never explain like a bunch of stuff. Like, I guess if you're out of phase with your reality, like, why are you still walking on the ground? Or, like, a lot of times you'll have ghosts, and they'll be, like, sitting in a chair, and it's like, why aren't you falling through that chair, and then the ground, and then the ground beneath that ground, and then, like, I guess, would the gravitational pull of the Earth have any effect on you, or would you float? Either way, you wouldn't be walking on solid ground, and this movie does that, but, I mean, I can't blame this movie for that. A lot of movies do that. And this one, at least, it justifies it, where he has to exert a specific amount of willpower on the specific part of his body that's phasing. So rarely, I think, is his entire body phased, so maybe that explains how he still has firm footing. But I don't want to give this movie too much credit and say, like, it's better than other movies about phasing in that regard. I think if I was to compose a list of the top 10 movies about people who can phase through walls, this would probably be on it, because how many movies like that could there possibly be? But it would still suck ass. But anyway, the spinoff, you know, you have this group of special government agents who can pass through walls, and they're hunting this guy, and I'm thinking maybe the government also tried to experiment with, like, wild genetically engineered beasts and give them phasing abilities, so maybe the captain guy, he has, like, an army of monsters, like, genetically engineered monsters that can phase through walls, and just a bunch of fucking fun, gritty exploitation movie action. That's all I'm wanting here. And that gets me from spinoff to crossover. And I had a couple of ideas. My first one, I was trying to figure out a way to actually do the Blob and just incorporate that into it. I was thinking maybe do like a post-apocalyptic thing where like the entire world is an ocean of the Blob. Like it's got that big from eating everyone. And so like the last outskirts of civilization live in these like tower cities that haven't been eaten yet. And the idea would be they want to find the last store of Karganite, because it's indestructible, the Blob can't eat through it, so they want to start building, like, rebuilding civilization with this new metal, but in the process, they release the Invisible Maniac. They release the 4D Man back upon the world to suck the life out of the living. But that, I don't know, I feel like I'm taking that same premise and teaming it up with something better, and I almost don't want to waste this, because I don't like to repeat, like, movies that I pick for crossovers or directors that I pick for the remake. I don't like to repeat them, so I don't like to waste them on shitty movies where it's like, oh, I had a good idea, now I can't use that for something else. But what the fuck? I'm going with Terminator, and I'm saying this is the same post-apocalyptic future. I guess 4D Man is a post-apocalyptic future. I just made that up myself. But this is a post-apocalyptic future. It's Skynet. They've taken over, and this Karganite is still there from the present. It's buried. And it basically becomes an arms race between the forces of Skynet, the Terminators, and the Resistance, because they know whichever one gets it first can use it to make weapons, or in the Terminator's case, build whole Terminators out of Karganite. So you have a group of these you know, Terminator, Skynet-era Resistance fighters breaking into this underground facility, and they don't know anything about the 4D Man being inside of it. They're just like, this is the thing we need. But they're being chased by one of those liquid metal Terminators, and he gets there first, and he absorbs the Karganite and builds, like, a solid Terminator frame out of it that he's sort of coating, sort of like the Terminator from the third movie, the girl Terminator that was, like half original Terminator, half T-1000. Sort of like something like a makeshift version of that, but he doesn't realize that when he does that, he becomes possessed by the fourth dimensional spirit of Robert Lansing, who, and it becomes like sort of like a battle for control over the body, the AI of the Terminator, and Robert Lansing's evil, I guess, astral projected psyche. I don't even know what you'd call it, but so it's like they're fighting in his mind, and then the Terminator is also hunting down these Resistance guys, and of course he's indestructible because he's made of Karganite, the greatest metal in the world. You know, it's funny, I'm just realizing that this movie is called 4D Man. It's about a guy who can phase through walls, and I'm much more focused on this indestructible metal Karganite. It seems like much more interesting as a plot device or a MacGuffin than the fact that this guy can phase through walls, just because they don't do anything with it. At least with the Karganite, well, they don't do anything with the Karganite either. This movie doesn't do anything with anything. This is a bad movie, is what I'm saying. And I've got nothing else for this, so I'm just going to move on to number 5, the gritty reboot. And for this, I'm saying, you know, I got to stop saying I'm saying. I say that a lot on this podcast. It's one of my cues. Like, I used to say and a lot, and I still do, but I don't say them as much as I used to. But I the thing I'm saying, that just really gets on my nerves in the edit. And I can very rarely edit around it, because I'm saying, like, I'm saying. And it's all sort of connected together in a way that I can't effectively cut it out. But anyway, what I'm saying is, my gritty reboot. I started with actor first. Usually I start with director first, but this, I was trying to think of somebody who I'd want to play the Robert Lansing part, and I settled on, and I didn't cast anybody else, because fuck them, who cares about any of the other characters in this movie. But for the Robert Lansing part, I went with Tom Cruise. And that maybe sounds a little weird. I'm a huge Tom Cruise fan. I don't care that he's in this creepy fucking religion. Everybody that isn't an atheist is in a creepy fucking religion. But he's a guy that I feel like is really fighting against himself in terms of his own aging. Like, you watch him in the Mission Impossible movies, and he's doing all his own stunts and always running and shit. And he's getting old, but it doesn't seem like he wants to quite accept that he's getting old. So I thought the idea of him playing this character who is getting prematurely old and has to suck the life out of others in order to stay young, I feel like he could relate to that in a way. Nah, I'm kidding, of course. I kid Tom Cruise because I love him, and mostly because I don't want Scientology to sue me, because they are famously litigious. But anyway, I'm saying Tom Cruise for the title role, and obviously put him in, I was going to say old man makeup, older man makeup, when he you know, has to suck the life out of people. But you do it right. You do it, you know, with a modern sensibility. I mean, I'm not even a modern sensibility, but like when a guy gets the life sucked out of him, you know, it's not just like he falls to the floor and it's the fucking Wolfman transition makeup. I'm saying it's like out of The Last Crusade. Remember when the Nazi guy at the end of that drinks the cup and he fucking melts away? You know, frankly, I'm not even making that much of a demand. If you just want to bring back the same special effect from Light Blast, where they melt, sort of like the other good Indiana Jones movie, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yeah, that's right. Fuck you, Temple of Doom and Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls. Those are controversial opinions that those are bad movies. But no, you get Tom Cruise. And then from there, that got me my director. I'm going to go ahead and say Doug Liman, because I don't think there's going to be another movie where I'm going to pick Doug Liman to direct him. I mean, I like him as a director, but I wouldn't say he necessarily has a style. He seems like a very mercenary director to me. At least he doesn't have an identifiable style, which is actually probably a commendable thing. Like, I think if you can watch a movie and go, well, that's a Tarantino movie, or that's a David Lynch movie, I feel like that's a bad thing. You know, like you've reduced this art form to a recognizable gimmick, you know, and you've just become a sort of a cliche of yourself. So, I don't know, I kind of think the Doug Liman model of showing no distinction whatsoever is probably the way to go. And I would say, because who cares if this fucking 4D Man remake is any good, it's 4D Man. Fine, get Doug Liman to do it. Or get anybody to do it. I don't fucking care. And that gets me to number 6, the TV show adaptation. This is the back half, this is the stuff that isn't movies, because I'm done talking about this fucking movie. And number 6, the TV show. And for this, I think for season 1, you just go the basic sort of Dexter route, just he has superpowers. A guy gets the power to phase through walls, and you know, he uses it for evil and ultimately uses it for killing. He's a psychic vampire, essentially. And you do the Dexter model, where you follow him as a villainous protagonist, and all the people that are around him that are looking for him, but they don't know it's him. And then, I'm saying you truncate that, so they actually find out it's him halfway through season 1. You don't bury that lead. And then at the end of the first season, the original 4D Man, the Robert Lansing analog, I don't know who you cast in that role, and maybe Tom Cruise slums it in TV for a couple seasons, or at least one season. Yeah, I think it's just one season. I think you kill him off at the end of the season, but what you find out in season 2 is the psychic vampirism is a two-way process. All the people that he sucked out and turned into old people, he sucked the life out of them, they become psychic vampires themselves. Maybe they do develop the faith. Yeah, I think they should have to. Yeah, basically, anybody that he sucked the life out of, they come back as like zombie revenants with the ability to phase through walls, but the same life-sucking bloodlust. So then season 2 basically it transitions from Dexter to The Strain, where like a special ops team has to hunt down all of these age-sucking phasing vampires. And then that gets you into season 3, where you bring in like H.P. Lovecraft shit, where the fourth dimension is opened because of all this phasing, and fucking crazy ass fucking monsters come out, and it's like you redo that Mist show, but you make it good, where like monsters come out and creepy extra dimensional mist comes out, and this same special ops group now has to hunt down monsters. And then you get into season 4, and you get into that fourth dimension is the dimension of time thing, and so they go into the portals into the fourth dimension to seal it. And then season 4 is all about time travel. You're going through time hunting down phasing vampires and Lovecraftian monsters in the Victorian era, and maybe you encounter Jack the Ripper there too, and he's a phasing monster or something. I don't even know. But you change it up every season to up the stakes and make it a higher and higher concept sort of thing. And then in season 5, everybody starts fucking. And that gets me to video game. I don't know why. That's not a good segue, but I got a segue into something. So the video game idea. And I don't think any video game of this should try to, you know, recreate the plot at all, because who gives a fuck about the plot of 4D Man? But I do think there is something to the idea of this trade-off between being able to phase through walls but needing to suck the life out of other people in order to maintain yourself every time you use your power. And I think that would be a cool mechanic to apply to a sort of like GoldenEye style multiplayer, like kill 'em all first person shooter sort of game, or maybe not a first person shooter, first person fighting game, where everybody has this power, but they also have that limitation. So if the more you use your phasing power to search for your enemy or escape your enemy, that's when you have to, like, it's incumbent upon you to find your enemy. Maybe there are NPCs as well you can use as sort of like fodder, but you have to suck the life out of people in order to stay alive, to use your phasing power to stay alive, to kill all of your opponents. I think they still make games like this, right? I think they call them PvP now, like player versus player, but that's basically the same idea as GoldenEye. That's what I played. I don't really play like new modern games. But that's my idea for the video game for 4D Man. Call it 4D Men, and then they all start fucking. No, that gets me to merchandise. And for the merchandising line, I didn't really have a lot. But there was like one thing at the very beginning of the movie, and then I think they try to do it again later on, where the experiment to see if the objects can pass through each other via the fourth dimension is they try to stick a pencil into a block of metal, and first it fails, and then it succeeds, and the pencil goes through the metal. So I'm saying you can sell like a magic trick for children, like the old pencil in the metal trick. I don't know, do kids even buy magic tricks anymore? I feel like that's probably not a market worth catering to. And also, I'm just saying, if you can make Cargonite, because, I mean, it's the strongest metal in the world, if you can just make that and distribute it, I feel like you'd make a profit, wouldn't you? I don't know, seems like a $1 million idea to me. I don't know why somebody hasn't thought of this before. You know, all these fictional metals, like, why don't they just make adamantium? Why don't they just make vibranium? Why don't they just make Cargonite? It seems like it would solve a lot of our problems. So that's my merchandising. I don't really have much more for that. And that gets me to what I already talked about and spoiled. And yeah, I'm not doing anything more than that. 40 Men, the gangbang film. That is my porn parody title. And I was thinking like maybe Four Dicks Man, like just a guy with four dicks. I mean, obviously three of them would be fake. I don't think you're gonna actually find like a porn star with four dicks. Maybe two dicks. I don't know. I feel like that's possible, but not four dicks. That's just totally implausible that anybody would be walking around with four dicks. Three is even pushing it, frankly. Three, strange credulity. Four is impossible. But no, 40 men, as in 40 men at a gangbang, gangbanging one girl. I mean, I say that sounds better. It doesn't sound better as a thing. It sounds awful. It sounds exploitative and rapey. But as a title construction, it sounds better than Four Dicks Man. So that's what I'm going with. 40 men, porn parody. And that gets me to the end of the fucking thing, the drinking game, the last thing, so that I can fucking stop this. And for this, the drinking game, I'm saying, because the movie's so fucking in love with that fucking mechanic, every time he phases through a wall, you take a drink. He does it a lot, and you're gonna want to be drunk when you watch this movie. Don't watch this movie. Don't fucking watch 4D, man. It sucks. It sucks ass. But anytime when you're not watching it, you see him phase through a wall, you take a drink. Anytime you see him suck out the youth from somebody, you take a drink. And finally, every time you hear that insufferable, unlistenable fucking jazz music come in, you take a drink. And as always, the disclaimer that sometimes comes at the end of the thing in a way that wouldn't be helpful. Usually I put it before, but don't drink. I don't want to say don't drink. Drink responsibly. I don't drink personally. This is for entertainment purposes only. Don't blame me if you drink to excess. It wasn't my fault. You made that choice. So that's all I got for this. This is this isn't the last episode of the podcast. I almost said, you know, this is the last episode of the podcast. No, I'm sticking with this. Hopefully next week will be better. I don't anticipate it will be because it's a movie I've never heard of that I'm thinking might be porn. The random category I got for next week was science fiction film, and the random science fiction film I got was a movie called Lethal Target from 1999, and I don't know nothing about this film, except I watched the trailer, and it seems like a generic alien ripoff with a lady on a space station hunting aliens, but I looked at the director's filmography, and there's a lot of, like Jim Wynorski-style softcore porn movies on it in his later years, so I don't know if this is one of his early movies, and he got out of that, or what, but I'm anticipating this might, like, I'm waiting for the day when I accidentally watch, like, full-on hardcore porn. Like, that's gonna happen, because I try to do little research, so, like, and when I say little research, as little as possible, because I want to walk in fresh, and I feel like Like, IMDb has porn on it. So if I search IMDb, sometimes, you know, I'm going to be surprised if the poster doesn't have boobs on it. This might certainly happen. But anyway, that's the end of the podcast. Thank you for listening. Lethal Target is next week. And as Johnny Red always says, walk on water, eat bullets, and shit out ice cream. Goodbye, everybody.